Golf isn't always about playing the best or most beautiful course. For example, the three of us were looking for any course that was open one day, and we found a 9-hole course that was next to a water reclamation center. If you've never been near one, you're lucky. The scent in the air was terrible, but we were playing golf and having fun when we pulled up to hole 6. Cody got out and hit one of his great drives. He followed it up with another great 5-wood that rolled up onto the green, leaving him 15 feet to the hole. He lined up his putt, gave it a tap, and let it roll right into the cup and claimed his eagle. He threw his arms in the air and fell over on the ground. I legitimately thought he had had a heart attack. He and JP were freaking out, shouting and running around while I stood there dumbfounded. I was fairly new to golf at the time and didn't understand what all the fuss was about, but I knew I'd remember this moment forever. These are the moments that we live for. This is what we play for. This is For the Record. Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice. Welcome back to another episode of For the Record. We're glad that you're here. Episode number 10. Double digits, baby. We made it.
Yeah.
Woo, woo.
That means if we do Roman numerals, it's an X, which looks cool.
It does, but would be a terrible score for a hole on golf.
X.
It was an interesting Final Fantasy entry as well.
On today's episode, we've got a little recap of our last few rounds. We have a golf rules discussion. I've got a little thing for us to talk about at the turn, and we've got to talk nerdy to me. So let's start with a little bit of recap of the last couple of rounds. Maybe we could talk about a little boss battle update, maybe our current handicaps. What you got for us, Eric?
Boss battle updates. I have 2 Dragon of Duffingtons at this point and 6, I believe, Fairway Phantoms. I have 1 Water Hazard Wizard, and that's about it.
Okay. Since we last talked, because I think it was just the last episode where we gave a kind of more in-depth update, I did get an additional Fairway Phantom and a Water Hazard Wizard, but today in our round, I don't know how I did this. I duffed a putt.
Yeah.
So I took my putter back and went to strike and made contact with the ground 2 inches behind the ball. And then by the time my putter hit the ball, it just jumped forward maybe a foot. I duffed a putt. I did not think that that was possible.
It was one of the most disappointing things I've ever seen. It just went nowhere.
I will say you started off the day kind of wishy-washy.
Kind of wishy-washy?
Yeah.
I 4-putt the first hole, but I parred 3 holes after that. I pulled it somewhat back together.
Yeah, you pulled it together nicely.
I'm actually pretty happy with the boss battle update. My handicap has dropped 0.6, I think, since last update. You just dropped a little bit too, Eric. You dropped another, it was like 0.3 or 0.4?
I was at 32.4. I'm now at 31.6.
Okay.
That's excellent.
John Paul, your handicap has not moved.
No.
But tell us about your boss battles.
So going back to the handicaps really quickly, I'm on this great precipice that I've got 3 more rounds. If I can post a low score in the next 3 rounds, I can break an 18 handicap, which would be awesome. But I just...
To be clear, you're saying you have 3 more rounds before you go into surgery and your season's basically over.
Well, no, that's also true. I actually only have 1 more round until my season's over, but I have 3 rounds until good scoring rounds start dropping off my gin.
Oh, gotcha.
So I've got this window of 3 rounds, but I only have 1 round left until my season's essentially over.
Well, you'll recover before the end of the season. You'll be back before October.
It should be about, end of August.
September, yeah, we still have...
Beginning of September, so I'll have fall golf.
We'll get a couple more rounds in for sure.
We'll get some fall golf in, yeah.
Okay,
but tell us so I'm doing well. Boss battles are going really well. I got 4 checked off today. I had a Fairway Phantom today. I had a Puttergeist today. I don't need any more of those. I have my 2nd Dragon of Duffington today, and I got a Green Warden, and he has been elusive for me. I need 1 more of him. And I've burned the edge on so many putts to put him down, but today I chipped one to like 2 inches. And Eric was like making fun. He's like, don't miss that because it's for 2 inches. But I did. Yeah. I actually said some unkind things to the Green Warden as I tapped that putt in.
You said several unkind things throughout this round.
It's true.
It was quite surprising for your character. And I've decided, Eric, I don't know if we can find this. Do you think we could find some extra strength shark repellent spray for John Paul?
We might need to because
it was one hole.
It was more than that.
It was bubbling for a while, and then it just boiled over.
I don't know. I think I was rambunctious. I was nasty on we played the par 5 today, which should be such an easy hole. It shouldn't be hard. It's dead straight. There's no water.
You hit it dead straight?
And it's quite wide as well.
I know. It's on paper, it's not a hard hole. And the last few times, I've just shanked it left into the trees. Like, loftily, far down into the trees. And the last couple of times I've done that, it's literally the ball has landed directly behind a tree. And today I had to chip out from behind a tree. Literally, I had to go backwards out onto the fairway, chipped it onto the fairway, and it rolled into the biggest freaking divot I've ever seen. Tried to get a club on it through the divot and managed to squirt it out right. So I was in the right rough. Hit it from the right rough, and it landed 3 inches from a fence. I asked Eric, I was like, how screwed am I on a scale from 1 to 10? And he's looking at it. He's like, which one is dead? I was like, 10. He's like a 9.
It was pretty bad.
And I managed to advance the ball like a foot.
I almost
wondered. It was 6 feet.
It was, so the style of fence, it's kind of like a T sort of fence that are all connected so with, you know, 3-inch round wooden cylinders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so he was right underneath the bridge of these.
And it's only about knee height as well. Yeah. So and it's.
I almost wondered if you were going to lay on the ground in billiard style.
I don't think that's legal. It's not. You're not allowed to do that. I would have. It would have been much easier than what I had to do. But the reason why I was so hot on that hole, and I lost my temper on that, but it was the last day of school for me today, so it was an emotional day, and it was an up-down roller coaster kind of day anyway. And I just got every bad break in the universe on that hole. I ended up getting a snowman on it, kind of torpedoed what was going to be a really good round. So I was really hot, but I recovered.
You did. You tomahawked a couple into the ground a couple of times.
Yep. And I got to the next tee box, and I was like, I'm going to be fine.
And you kicked the poor defenseless golf cart.
You did.
I did kick the golf cart.
So extra strength shark repellent spray on you, John Paul.
You know,
the shark repellent spray does nothing. Oh, and it's supposed to be the goggles. The goggles do nothing.
I was just thinking, we all had, at some point today, a shot where we couldn't go anywhere but into a tree. That might be a round 2 boss battle, the end of the forest.
Level 2, avoiding all trees.
Or like you get behind a tree and you're able to still save par or bogey.
Well, on the fourth hole today, so John Paul was stuck behind a tree. He had maybe a 6-inch gap to the right of a big tree, and he hit a low flyer, and it was beautiful, and it rolled right up onto the green.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you did the putts, but it was quite well.
No, I managed to bogey that hole, and that was a great score on that hole. But you had a pretty good tree recovery today, too. We had some good luck with the trees today. We had some bad luck. The worst luck with a tree today was Eric, because he had a hole where he hit a second shot, and there was like one tree that could possibly have grabbed it, and it's a 3-foot-tall sapling.
Like, they just planted it.
They barely plant, and it just smacked dead center into the trunk of that, landed directly below the tree, and the only way he could get a club on it was, like, to swing right at the tree. And I was telling Cody in the cart, I was like, well, Eric has chose violence, because the noise that your 3-wood made whacking into the trunk of that tree was aggressive.
Yeah, there's nothing else to do. I couldn't even chip the other direction. It was terrible.
Is the 3-wood broken?
No, it's fine.
Okay, good.
Oh, good.
On the boss battle, the only ones I've got left. I haven't even had a shot at Clive.
None of us have. He is very difficult.
I haven't had a chance. I've been in the sand. I think I've been in a trap one time since we started this, and I did not get out of the trap.
So you know how you said last episode that you subconsciously, over your golfing history, just avoid bunkers at all costs?
Yeah.
I think that if it comes down to it, you should just start targeting the bunkers.
Yeah, you might need to. One round.
You know what? It's not a bad notion. And I'm telling you, on the first hole, the bunker on the left, that's the one. I should start aiming for that bunker.
Or if you're on the back nine, there's a few bunkers by the green that are really nice.
Yeah, there are some good opportunities at our course. Maybe I do that. Maybe I take a course and just say screw the score. I want Clive. I'm going to go after every bunker I can find. Aim for the bunkers like they're the green.
Because I was in a bunker today that was 10 foot vertically below that,
that's
hole.
Not the
that's,
bunker.
That is not it.
That's not the bunker to try. If anybody ever finds our course, that bunker is terrifying.
It's a par three, so if you come up 5 yards short, you're bouncing back into the bunker.
It's brutal.
The edge of the it's on a giant hill, and the edge of the hill is lined with railroad ties. And so if you come up short, you bang into the railroad ties, and it deposits you at the bottom of the hill in that huge bunker. It's insanely hard. I've taken to clubbing up on that hole because long is doesn't hurt you, but short does.
Now we're going to talk about a few golf rules. USGA has their rules and guidelines. We want to talk what's casual rules that you can play by. And the first one we're going to talk about is how long is too long to look for a ball.
And to clarify, the USGA has updated this rule recently. So if you're playing by the rules golf, which we do, by the time you start looking for your ball, you have 3 minutes to look for your ball.
I feel like
it used to be five, now it's three.
Oh, whoa. Five seems like a long time.
Yeah. They changed that. Now it's three.
I feel like it depends on the situation. Hole 10 on our course. If you hit off of that and there's that kind of cliff and you have an idea of where it went and then you look for a second and you're like, yeah, I went in the ravine. You just can move on. But I feel like if you think you know where it is, I think 3 minutes is fair. I wouldn't do more than that, but I think 3 minutes is good.
Case in point, a couple of weeks ago, we played that same hole and you and John Paul both pushed it out right.
Yeah.
And yours we found relatively quickly because it was just hanging on the edge. John Paul's took a little bit more time to find, but I would say we found it under the time limit. I will say the caveat on this is I think pace of play matters.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you are holding up the course because you're looking for a ball every shot, you got to change something.
Yeah.
I think there's two factors that play into this in my head. Number one is common sense, because there is a difference between losing your golf ball because you blocked it right out of bounds into an impenetrable forest of trees or down a chasm.
Why are you looking at me while you're saying that?
No, I was just looking around. Don't spend time looking for that golf ball. You're not going to find it. Like, you're not going to find it. But the worst is when you know it's right there and you can't see it. All of us have lost a ball like 3 inches off the fairway, and it's infuriating, and you're having a good round. I don't, like, if that ball should be there, I don't mind taking an extra moment to look for it. I think that that's totally acceptable. And if you are on a course and there is no one around you, take whatever time you need. It doesn't matter. But the guys who drive me crazy are the guys who are, like, whacking through weeds like 9 feet deep for 20 minutes looking for their ball when everybody's backed up on a Saturday. It's like, dude, the ball is gone. You're not going to find it.
Or even worse, the guys that hit three or four and then go try and find all three or four every hole. It's ridiculous.
I have one that's worse. The guys that hold up a course because he decided to go swim in a lake.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
That guy is the biggest jerk of them all. Yeah,
but that's why that factor was there, because that wasn't a ball, it was a club. And I don't know what the amount of time the USGA says it's legal to look for your golf club. I don't know if there's an official rule for that. Additionally, there was no one else on that course. Holding anyone up. I mean, you could argue we were keeping the marshal from going home.
I guess. But I think that, yes, 3 minutes is the official rule, but have common sense is a great takeaway, because sometimes you need to just, okay, that ball, I'm not finding it, I got to drop and keep going. And other times, it's got to be here, I'm going to take my maximum allotted time to find it.
Yeah. Cue the dependent music, be aware.
Yeah. I mean, like last time when we were on that back nine and I hit I think it was either my 3-wood or my 5, and like none of us saw where it went. We thought it went over by the bathroom. And so we all looked over there, but it was like none of us had a clue. It could have been anywhere. That was one where we took the full 3 minutes, because nobody had any idea.
And it was important for us to look. I'm really sad we didn't find that.
Yeah, me too.
The second part of this discussion, so like, okay, that's for your ball. How this is kind of stupid. How long are you allowed to look for your tee after you hit a shot off the tee box?
Now, I think we need to give some context to the listeners, because despite the fact that all of the people that we know who are good golfers and every YouTuber that we watch and all the professionals all use old-fashioned wooden tees, I consider a wooden tee a marked sign of poverty.
Oh, wow.
I
buy plastic tees. I know He's all buy plastic. I'm teeist. I'm very teeist. I don't know. Like, it feels cheap to me to put a golf ball on a wooden tee. I don't know. It shouldn't bother me. It bothers me.
That is not why I don't like wooden tees. I don't like wooden tees because they literally snap every other hole, and I can't be bothered to have a million tees in my pocket.
Yeah.
I carry one tee, a long one, and a short tee, and they last the entire round.
They do. And I have tees that last multiple rounds. I know I've got one right now with a slightly bendy tip, and I've been using it for several rounds with its little bendy tip, and I'm going to keep using it until it doesn't work anymore. Additionally, on our plastic tees, there's printing, and we know pretty much exactly how far to push it down the printing to tee it at the perfect height.
They make those in wooden as well, by the way.
I'm going to play devil's advocate for the wooden tees.
Okay.
When we go and play, there are plastic tees everywhere, broken plastic tees all over the place, and you notice them because mm-hmm. they never break down. They're always there, and they're just going to slowly accumulate more and more. The wooden tees, they just become wood chips, and you can be mowed over. They'll just become part.
That's totally fair.
Sure. That's just down to people, though. People, don't leave your trash around.
Yeah, but if you break a tee, do you go and find the pieces? And no.
I have several broken tees in my bag. But most people don't. You're right. That's fine.
I mean, even with pace of play, if you're going to look for a broken tee, no, you're just going to move on.
So how long do you have then with this whole thing of how long it takes us to look for tees, because the plastic tees are significantly more expensive. So when we lose a tee, we're always like, oh, where's my tee?
Mm-hmm.
And so we take an extra 5 seconds to look for it, because sometimes it goes forward, sometimes it gets flung backwards and all over the place. So what is an acceptable time to look for your tee after a shot? Because all three of us are having eyes on the ball because, you know, we don't always land the fairway.
Yeah.
We need as many eyes as we can get following the ball.
Yeah.
So, I find this is a hard question for me to answer, because if I hit a really good drive and I break a tee or lose the tee, I don't care. But when I've blocked one left into the trees, somehow picking up the tee and reclaiming it for another day is like a consolation prize to me.
Therapeutic.
I have the hardest time like blocking a shot and then losing the tee. That mentally wears on me. It's stupid. The tee probably costs 5 cents.
So this is
but I won't let it go.
This is the start of the chain reaction on that par five that caused John Paul to go off today.
I found that tee.
Oh, I thought you didn't. I thought you were looking.
No, I found the tee. The reason why that tee shot bothered me is that I had one swing thought in my head on that tee box. Is like, don't block it left. Don't block it left. Don't block it left.
You know you're supposed to do the opposite, right? Instead of saying what you're not going to do, you focus on what you are going to do.
I picked an intermediate target pointed at the right rough.
But you were aimed left.
I know. I don't understand. I don't understand what it is about that hole. It's
meh.
Eric told me something he did the other day, and it was kind of helping with your mental game for golf.
And I didn't do it today, and you
can tell, because the last couple of rounds, you did it. But give John Paul an overview.
Oh, what are you talking about?
He wasn't there.
I wasn't there.
Okay.
Tell me about this. Well, I need help.
The mental thought that I had, I used ChatGPT. And asked it, or Google Gemini, one or the other, and I asked it ways that I could improve my golf mental game. Because for me, that's a big part of my playing. I'm so nervous and so anxious every time I go on the golf course. I pay attention to everything. I can't focus. And so it gave me some ideas. One of the main one was every time I approach it, I wasn't paying attention to the result. I was making micro adjustments to how it felt when I was swinging. So the result is what happened with that micro adjustment.
Uh-huh.
But that was never my swing thought. My swing thought was, all right, I'm going to try this one small thing, this one small difference, and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. So for example, say on that par three over the water, the first par three on our back nine, you hit the shot, and instead of, oh, the result was the ball landed off the green, off the back, it was, okay, I made contact here, and so next time I'm going to try an adjustment here. Is it
exactly, kind of that type of thing? Yeah. And it wasn't, oh, I hit that shot badly. It was never that. It was, I hit that to the right. What adjustment do I make? Micro adjustment? Okay, hit it less right. And it wasn't the fact that I was playing poorly or great. It was all about those little adjustments and what the result was. And this time, the last game, I was all over the place. I couldn't hit, I hit one good shot the whole day because I wasn't even thinking about that. I was so worried about the people behind us, the people in front of us.
Yeah.
It was all over the
place.
That's a
perfect thing to talk about. And I'd love to add on this a little bit, because did you guys notice my new putting routine today?
Take forever behind the ball?
It might have taken an extra second.
You know how they have in golf, like the back off challenge? Like, you just made John Paul do the back off challenge from his microphone.
I couldn't help it. Sorry. I had to take the shot.
No, you may have noticed that I had a slightly different putting routine today. And what I was doing is putting the putter just behind the ball as I was walking up to it, just to get a feel for the line. And I hear this golf advice all the time. I hear it all the time. And I've got to work on being better about it. There are so many variables in golf that are outside of our control. You get a bad lie, or there's wind, or there's grain in the grass, there's micro imperfections on the golf ball itself, greens have been punched. There's so many things that are variables that are outside of your control. The best golfers are less concerned about outcome and more concerned about process. And so they consider victory on a stroke not necessarily based on the outcome, although hopefully the outcome is good, but it's whether they followed their process. Vis-a-vis, did they visualize the shot? Did they commit to that shot? Did they execute it the best way that they could? And could they live with the result? And so today with my putting, I've struggled with some putting lately. I've had some big problems with putting, and I'm not a bad putter. I have decent feel. I'm not the best green reader, and that's an eyesight problem. You guys have known the story for that long time. And so it's just like, you know what? Just commit to a line. And that's what I was doing. And so the moment I put the club down, I'm committing to the line. And then all I'm worried about is speed. Because when I sit over the ball and I think about both the line and the speed in that moment, it gives me the yips. I just lock up and then I bang it 20 feet by or something like that because I'm nervous and I've got no feel. And I was like, if I can just commit to the line right when I walk up to the ball, then I'm only thinking about speed. And then if I misread it, I misread it. It's no big deal. As long as you've got the speed okay, you've got a decent chance of making the comeback.
Yeah.
And so there's got to be some way to apply that to all of the shots where we're like, okay, commit to a line. When we were on the fifth hole today, I did something really mean to you because I walked up. I was trying to help, but I walked up and I said, hey, Eric, I'm gonna screw with your swing on this. I'm going to screw with you on this thing. And what I meant is I'm going to look at you and then I'm going to screw you up by giving you a swing thought because you've been skyballing everything. So I was like, I'm going to see what he's doing. I'm going to tell him what he's doing. And what you did is you walked, because I messed with you. I felt really bad. You didn't pick an intermediate target. You did no practice swing. Like everything that's in your routine for a drive, you did none of it. You walked up, you smacked it, and it wasn't a terrible result, but I felt terrible because I was like, okay, if victory here, rather than outcome, is process, I just destroyed your process. I wiped your process out. And so that I felt less bad about the result and more bad about the messing process. With your process.
That's fair.
Can I tell you, that's actually pretty solid advice for life in general. Whether it's in work or your relationships,
it's
like
true.
Focusing on what you can control and micro adjustments to make it better instead of like really brash, like off the wall decisions at a spur of a whim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. To bring it back to the original question, how long do you take to look for a tee? For me, I will scan back and forth, walk to the front, walk to the back, done.
I'm in the same boat. I'm like, I'm guessing it's most likely either in front or behind me, maybe 5 to 10 yards. I'll do a quick glance, and if I can't see it, I'll do a quick walk. And after that, I can't be bothered.
I'll look for it on my way by, as we're walking up,
or even as we're driving up. This guy over here pointing at John Paul, he's going to have the dissenting opinion on this for sure.
I'm going to make a confession here, and I'm ashamed to admit this. I hate losing tees so much. I probably spend longer on the tee box looking for them, but...
I mean, he spends so much money on them.
I like playing ready golf. I know, sitting here with like a $600 plus driver, and I'm whinged up about a 10-cent tee. It's ridiculous.
You're so elitist about your plastic tees. It must cost so much.
Yeah, I play Titleist Pro V1s. They're like many dollars a ball, and I could buy like...
To be fair, you get really mad when you lose a ball too.
Well, yeah, but like losing a sleeve of Pro V1s is probably every golf tee I'll use in my entire life.
That's true. That's very true.
But anyway, I will look for the tee, but I generally tend to be early on the tee box because I play ready golf, and so I'll often tee off first even if I don't have honors just to keep pace of play up.
Yeah.
And if I don't find my tee immediately after, I'm not as diligent at spotting the ball for the next guy hitting because I'm secretly still
looking for your tee.
I know.
What's going on?
I know. I'm so sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't have great eyesight, so I'm not really good
Shame.
At
it. You're a bad friend.
I know. I'm a bad friend. I'm a horrible human being.
So you're
being.
Telling me every time I walk up to the D box and audibly say, "You got eyes on this for me?"
Yeah, I'm sitting there looking for a tee. Yeah, I've got eyes on that. You go ahead. Swing away, man.
Oh, man. I mean, to be fair, everyone is responsible for their own ball.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're helping hands and helping eyes. Kind of like you said, losing a ball in the rough just off of the fairway is ridiculous. We don't like the gallery rule
is the worst
in play. But so we help each other spot the ball, and you're just, I can't believe that. Confession time, man.
You know what? Spotting balls. Can we
just some
confession since we're talking about that particular thing? This is a mental thing that I've got to do. When you hit a bad shot, how good are you at tracking the ball?
Sorry, say that when I hit a bad shot?
When you hit a bad shot. Because when you hit one down the middle of the fairway, it's going to be easy to find. But we watch it because we want to see it, you know, because it's this beautiful flying trajectory. You block one right into the trees. Does the anger of blocking it right into the trees make you take your eyes off that ball? Which is dumb because it's going to be way harder to find.
Yeah.
Right?
I used to be a lot worse at this. But I at this point, I keep an eye. As long as I see it off the tee, I keep it in my line.
I think directionally, I have a really good sense whether it's a good shot or a bad shot. Where I get thrown is like if it's going a little bit right or a little bit left, I know roughly where it lands. And in my head, I tell myself, okay, that means it bounced here and probably rolled this much here. But the grass eats it or it hits something out or hit a tree. And that's where I'm like, okay, it's somewhere here, but I don't know.
One of the worst feelings in golf is when you're looking for your ball and all of the people who are helping you look know that you're being stupidly optimistic about how far it went. So they're 50 yards behind you actually looking for where your ball probably is. And so, you're 50 yards ahead. Like, no, I totally cleared these trees.
It's kind of
funny. And it totally didn't.
I know that you probably think I do that a lot because I drive past where I know that I hit it. I do that intentionally when I'm on a cart. Because as I'm driving down, I go intentionally past and then make a loop back because the angle of the grass gives you a different angle of where you can see that ball might stand out.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, we totally believe that. That's totally what happened. Did you have a micro fracture in that ball?
We talk about ready play. Today, there were several times when you guys were looking for a ball and I had mine and I was like, I'm just going to hit.
Yep.
Is that okay with you guys?
That is absolutely the correct thing.
Okay.
If we're not within 20 yards of each other, hit away.
Okay. Yeah, there's just a few times that like I was like, I'm technically in front of these guys, but I have my ball. It's going
to
hit.
I got to see a foursome play earlier this year, and I was playing alone, and I was behind them. And they were a foursome. They were the fastest foursome I've ever seen. They were
fastest
good.
Foursome.
They were good golfers, and I was playing alone. and they were keeping pace. I was not waiting on them. And I'm like, how? And so I stopped and I watched one of the guys, and he's got to be close to a scratch golfer. He has a pre-shot routine that looks almost identical to mine. He spends the same amount of time picking an intermediate target. He takes a swipe. And I was like, how, when they're taking the same amount of time to hit the ball that I'm taking, how is it that they're going so fast?
Okay, how?
Are they all doing it at the same time?
They're all doing it at the same time. And so they're going through their pre-shot routines, and then it's literally bang, 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 bang.
Okay.
And then they're up. And so the whole time they're waiting for their buddy to hit, they're finding their intermediate target. They're checking their lie. They're shooting their distance. And when their buddy has hit, they are ready and they go.
Okay. So today on that first hole, when we drove past you, because I thought you would hit a bit further, and you're like, I'm back here, guys. So I pulled up. I hope we didn't screw you up.
No, I was fine with it. I was just like, heads up, I'm hitting right where you are.
I know. And I was actually perfectly comfortable with it, because okay, if it was going to go towards us, I knew you would have given us a four or something.
Yeah, that's what I was just trying to get your attention. Like,
yeah,
I don't want to kill one of my friends.
We were talking about my bad eyesight earlier, too. I yelled over at you to make you feel better. I was like, no, I got eyes on it. Go ahead and hit it. And the moment I heard your club make contact with it, I never saw it. And so I'm just looking over at Cody. I was like, surely someone will tell me if this is careening towards my head.
He was looking for a tee.
Yeah, he must have.
All right, folks. We have an at the turn today. Apparently, Cody had a conversation earlier with his wife that...
one of those rare conversations that they have together. Rare
conversations. But he was talking with his wife, as he is wont to do, and apparently there was some thought-provoking something that came on that he won't reveal to us. But he's going to tell us now, and we're going to mull it over and react.
It's nothing too crazy or mind-revealing. I just didn't want to spoil and have any... I want off-the-cuff responses.
Okay.
And... it was just funny because...
my cuff is ready.
Yes. We golf regularly, mm-hmm, at least once a week, and sometimes more when we can sneak it in with our busy schedules.
Sneaky, sneaky.
And I was just... the other day, I was just feeling really sore after the golf round. And I was telling my wife, just like, man, I'm just so sore. And she just kind of like looked at me and was like, you need to do some yoga. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, I don't know if I could be a yoga person. I don't know if I would ever go to like a yoga class. I would feel quite uncomfortable. But why are you laughing at that?
I was just thinking about the three of us going to a yoga class together.
Right?
Yeah. The mental thought of us getting in like the old leotards. And yeah.
Oh gosh, that is a picture that people do not need to see.
I don't think the way that we look would bother me, and I don't think doing the yoga would bother me. But watching the faces of the other people as the three of us walked in, that would bother me.
And it feels stupid because in today's day and age, you know, that should not be a problem. There shouldn't be this kind of weird thing. But the question that I wanted to riff on, do you think yoga would help?
Yeah.
My answer is also yes. Can we move on?
Okay. Sounds it. Totally kidding. Yes. All right. Next topic.
I would like to elaborate on this. Are you okay if I elaborate on this?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the deal. I'm a little bit older than you guys are, but it's not the age, it's the mileage. So I have way more skeletal problems.
Hence the surgery.
We'll call them skeletal problems, but it isn't just the neck. I've got shoulder problems. I was a mechanic as a young man, and it bore a toll. I got hip problems, I got shoulder problems. I'm okay. I'm not terribly flexible. I'm quite immobile. And what I've learned is that is hugely detrimental to the golf game. Like, a lack of flexibility is a huge problem. Eric, you've got a really buttery swing. There's still improvement that needs to be made, but it's smooth. It's very, very smooth. It's a smooth action. Cody's a natural athlete. He can swing fast and hard at a club. It's an amazing thing to watch. I think somebody watching my swing won't understand how many hacks there are that make it work. There are so many things that I have to do and sync up just properly to make my swing work. It's literally the quest of a lifetime to make my swing work the way that it does. But because of the skeletal problems that I have, I've just had to hack around it. The other day, I had to do yoga with my students at school. I don't know yoga.
I didn't know this.
Okay, so we use some various computer programs for math, and the math program that we use sets what's called a stretch goal for the kids. So if they make roughly a year and a half progress in 1 year, then they will make their stretch goal in math. And so I reward all of the kids in my school that make a stretch goal with a 30-minute stretch party. And so I prepare a room in the building where we turn down the lights and we light fake candles and we put on inspirational music in the background. And I pretend to know yoga.
Guru John Paul.
Yes. And I lead them through some simple stretches and we have a good time. It's total garbage. I'll walk you through it. And then after we're done doing that, then we eat Laffy Taffy because it's stretchy as well. So we're celebrating all things stretchy. And then we do limbo. Which is very stretchy, and they love the heck out of limbo. And then we do some kind of goofy dances like the chicken dance and things like that, and that's our party. So the yoga section of it is about 6 or 7 minutes, and all I do is we sit cross-legged and stretch our arms up as high as we can above our heads. We do deep breathing. We sway slightly to the right. We sway slightly to the left. We do the butterfly thing with our feet together and bounce our legs up and down. And then we do a stretch where we tighten ourselves up into a ball and then over 5 seconds slowly spread out into a starfish. I made all this crap up. I had to do this party 7 times because I have 7 different grade levels. I do a party for each grade level. I felt fantastic. And I'm broken, but it was great. And I thought, you idiot, if you would sit down and actually make an effort to stretch just once a week, just make an effort to stretch, do you know how much better your life would be, let alone your golf swing, right?
Do we want to make a commitment?
I think we have to.
Well, because that's the thing, because today in our golf round, we opted to use carts because it's just getting really hot and we just didn't feel like we had the energy in us. We normally walk, but we decided to ride carts today. And we're on the tee box and we have kind of our little faux, you know, stretching your arms a bit, grab your driver and, oh yeah, I'm getting stretched out. That's not really a stretch.
It's not.
And so it showed. My first 2.5 holes were terrible. And I think I told you guys multiple times, I feel like I have no control over my body. And I just wonder if a stretch routine, whether it's yoga or even just some stretches, would help with something like that.
All right. When do you leave for the golf course? On Thursdays.
Well, I'm out of work now, but generally I'm able to get out of my school. It takes...
He's not fired, people. It's summer break.
It's summer break. The problem is that the traffic is unpredictable. So I generally leave between 4 and 4:15.
And we leave around 4:20.
Yeah, and we get there a bit faster because we're closer.
You're much closer.
All right. Do we want to make a commitment while you're on spring break or summer break? And do we want to say at 3:30, we take a 20-minute stretching break?
So before we even leave?
Before we leave.
I was going to say... like, what if we showed up on the driving range and went off in the corner and started our stretches in front of everybody?
No.
Come on, man.
I can't do that.
I love this idea.
Which one?
Both of them. I actually like the uncomfort of doing it in front of other people.
I can't do that.
Especially at our golf course, because our golf course is peopled by the people of Walmart. They would look at us with the most fantastic... I mean, we turn every head in that place. They'll be sitting there, like, burping and drinking beers, and we're going to have, like... yoga pose and a candle.
I'm just imagining like the pro in the pro shop. Okay. He's going to look down. He's going to be like, Cody, John Paul, and Eric, stop whatever you're doing.
But this is no, I think it's probably wise to do it before we go. I don't know how practicable that will be for me because I'm literally driving for more than an hour. Stretching before I drive for an hour probably isn't going to help, but it probably wouldn't hurt, and then I could do a brief stretch when I get there.
Exactly.
But this is going to sound really hokey. I think the stretching is beneficial, but you were talking about being out of touch with your body today, and this is going to sound really guru-y and Eastern. that I feel like I've taken a significant amount of Kung Fu and Tai Chi in my life as college courses and post-college courses. There is something to be said about the meditative state and the deep breathing that go along with those stretches that put you in touch with your physical form and allow you to center. That's a real thing.
It also helped that I chugged a whole bunch of electrolytic drinks to recover some dehydration.
Yeah. I want to try this. Let's try it.
Okay.
And we're going on a trip this week.
Oh.
Before we go at the place we're staying, before we leave for the round, let's get together. And it's going to be awkward, and that's okay.
Are we doing yoga?
I think it could just be yoga or just stretching, or just some deep breathing and stretching.
We got to find some stretches.
I'll do it.
Eric's going to find some stretches.
So okay. I'm happy to come up with a routine for us.
I mean, I'm just letting you know there's a lot of yoga poses that I don't think I would be able to do.
Yeah, I won't pick any of those. I know what I'm doing because I do them quite often for my back.
I love this.
You've been holding out on us.
Yep.
You're disloyal.
Disloyal.
This is how he's going to come from behind to beat us quite badly.
Yeah. Joke's on you guys. I'm just going to do the worst poses ever so you guys are wrecked for the whole round.
And then Eric's going to show up.
Eric's going to show up. He's going to have this beautiful swing, and I'm going to be limping.
Yeah, John Paul and I are going to be like leaning on each other. Oh, what did you do?
I win.
That's great. Okay, do it. Hands in, 1, 2, 3.
Ugh. Yeah, yoga.
All right, it's time for another Talk Nerdy to Me.
Talk Nerdy to Me is fastly becoming one of my favorite segments on this show. I love that we get to riff on stuff that we're passionate about, and we always seem to have pretty great opinions, if not dissenting opinions from each other. The question on today's Talk Nerdy to Me for us to elaborate on: which stories, and when I say stories, we could talk about any sort of media. This could be a book, could be a movie, could be a TV show. What stories out there have the best redemption arcs for a character?
Redemption arcs.
To give an example, I'll start because I think it's probably one of the most famous. Darth Vader, Anakin in Star Wars.
Do you think it's a good one?
Do I think it's a good redemption arc?
Yeah. Like, does it hold up today?
Oh, that's a good criteria to look at. It's not my favorite, but from Star Wars Episode 4, New Hope, all the way to Return of the Jedi, when we see Darth Vader as he is, and you kind of have to fill in the gaps of who he was just through the stories of old Ben Kenobi, I knew your father, you know, and all of that, and then having him help Luke in the end, throw Emperor Palpatine over the rails and stuff.
Yeah. Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
30 years,
probably a little longer than that at this point. I like that.
Hmm.
I do not like the portrayal of Anakin from the Padawan that he was to becoming Darth Vader. I feel like that's a bit weak.
Okay.
See, I'm gonna give you just a little different opinion. I feel like episode 4, whatever, I feel like that one, and even to an extent the next episode, they didn't plan on him being Luke's father very well. There's very little of that internal conflict that you see in Vader. And then it was like, oh, we need this now. And they flip it. And I feel like it's not done in a particularly good way. You don't really see that conflict in him very well. And it could just be because he's wearing a mask, but...
To be completely fair, I also don't think that they planned on Luke and Leia being siblings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to take a very meta... See if you can follow me on this. I'm going to go very meta on this question because I don't have a problem with the Darth Vader redemption arc, but Darth Vader does have one of my favorite redemption arcs, and we're watching it right now. Because during the prequel era, I hated Hayden Christensen.
Oh, he did so good.
Here's the deal. I hated him through the whole prequel thing. I thought his acting was, and that's not his fault. I mean, he's being directed. Okay? He's doing the best that he can, okay? I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so Rachel and I bit the bullet and watched all of the Clone Wars, and that takes some dedication to do that.
Seven seasons?
Seven seasons of that, and to do that as an adult takes more dedication, I think, We didn't grow up with this. We're going back as adults and watching it. And so some of the episodes are painful. But Anakin Skywalker in the Clone Wars is a very different character than Anakin Skywalker in the prequel films.
Yeah.
He's very different. And I see his transformation into Darth Vader being way more believable in the Clone Wars.
Mm.
And agreed. It's way better handled. And I love that they brought Hayden Christensen back in Ahsoka.
Oh my gosh.
And they didn't have him do Anakin Skywalker as Hayden Christensen played Anakin Skywalker. They let him play Anakin Skywalker from the Clone Wars, and it felt different.
Yeah.
And I want more of it. It's excellent. And so if you're talking about redemption arcs, let's talk about the Hayden Christensen Anakin Skywalker redemption arc. I buy him as Vader now. Big time buy him as Vader.
And having him come back and recap in Obi-Wan Vader,
yeah,
that was amazing. Like, that redeemed I feel like that redeemed the prequels, it how well
The redemption arc had a redemption arc.
Yeah. The redemption arc. It's so literally, that one I said, I was going meta. I'm really going meta because I really do think, and I think that the prequels become better because of this content that's going back and kind of almost retconning and fixing some of the stuff that happened in the past.
Can I tell you my number one favorite redemption arc in all of media?
I think we know it, but go ahead.
It's Zuko.
Oh, Zuko. From
Avatar The Last Airbender.
Raise your hand if you agree that Zuko is the greatest redemption arc in all media. All three of our hands are raised.
It's so good.
And it wouldn't be anywhere near as good if Iroh wasn't so amazing.
Yeah, that dichotomy that they have, the two of them. And I tell people this, Avatar The Last Airbender, you know, the cartoon from Nickelodeon, they've done movies which we forget about.
No, there's no movie.
There is no movies in Boston. We know nothing about that.
And even the Netflix series has fallen, I feel, quite a bit
no,
short.
No, stop. There's no movies in Boston.
Keep going, Ingram.
But I tell people that the cartoon, I was like, oh, it's really good. And I don't mean for a cartoon. I think that it's one of the best storytelling experiences that we have in modern media.
Well, and I love the way that they don't make Iroh immediately the sage old man. He's kind of just the quirky uncle, and he's kind of funky. And then you learn a little bit more of his backstory, and then you realize that he just loves his nephew.
Yeah.
And just wants to save him from himself.
The scene where Iroh hugs him when he comes back in the tent, I cry. I'm a grown man. I'm not a particularly emotional one. I can't handle that. It's so beautiful.
Did I tell you the first time I saw that series is actually when season 3 was coming out, and it was the final episode, Sozin's Comet, was airing on TV, and I came across it. And I watched it, and I had no idea what was going on, but all I told myself, I have to watch this show.
It was so good.
And I'm so glad I did. But his story, Zuko, fantastic redemption arc. What else you got?
No, quickly, touring the country right now is the Avatar The Last Airbender in-concert musical experience. To all of our listeners, if you have a chance, I think for all of us and our families, that's going to be a core memory. If you get the chance to get tickets to that, do not hesitate. It is worth it. Go. You will have a fantastic time. If you have no idea what we're talking about, first go watch the cartoon series, become a disciple like the three of us, and then go get tickets to the concert. You will not regret it.
Agreed.
All right. So just for fun, I put in to Google best redemption arcs. Can you guess what the number one that it came up with is?
No.
It's Zuko.
Is it really?
It rates it the best there is.
Okay.
That's compelling.
Let's quick fire some others that I think are really good. Because Steve from Stranger Things is another personal favorite of mine.
That was a really good one.
Season 1, I hated him. And now he's one of my all-time favorite characters. He's fantastic.
There's a book series that's called The Ranger's Apprentice.
Oh, yeah.
One of the characters in the first book is a young man. He's an antagonist as we begin that book. And he ends up becoming a knight, and he has a redemption arc where he kind of comes to his senses and realizes that he was a bully. And that's a really good arc. That one sticks out as a good one in my mind.
I'll quickfire a couple that are my favorite. It's really short, but Boromir Him coming back from trying to steal the ring.
Yeah, and that's a good one.
Just throwing his life away to protect.
That is a really good one. That's compelling.
He passed the test after all.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
Love it.
What about Snape?
Yeah, I was going to say Snape. It's really good.
Oh, man. And what's interesting is he was on the good side. I mean, he had his redemption way earlier, but I literally until I read those books long before the movies came out. I read them as they came out. And I didn't see that coming. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And what's fantastic is when you go back and reread those books, and even when you go watch those movies, that inevitable redemption arc was planned from the very beginning. It's the opposite of Star Wars, where Star Wars, they were just, it felt like George Lucas was being, oh, and they're brother and sister. He just made that up. No, like Rowling knew that Snape was critical to that. And apparently, lore has it, she took Alan Rickman off to the side as they started filming the first one into a room, swore him to secrecy, and told him how it was going to end. And if you go and watch Rickman's performance through all of those movies, you can tell that he knew. He plays it so well.
I'll have to watch him again.
Rest in peace, my friend. He was a fabulous actor. Lost him too early.
I really hope when they remake it, because they are redoing him in a series format, I hope that they can live up to some of the greatness. Now, some of the movies have some weird moments, and I think they have a chance. But
Rickman's performance is going to be hard to top.
Another great one, the Loki series, bringing Loki, his redemption arc
incredible. That's a good one. I like that.
Because when you watch the original Marvel series, the up to Infinity Wars, he's a scumbag. You don't like him. Like, he's fun, but he's still the villain of the piece. And then Loki just really shows how much he actually cared about his family and just ignored his feelings. So good.
I'm really quickly, and this isn't a spoiler because I know you're not going to do it, but one of the things that's fascinating is that Andor, which is, we won't do anything spoilery, Andor has a really fascinating redemption arc, but what makes it fascinating is that it's a redemption arc that is abruptly interrupted.
Mm.
And the interruption of that arc is very compelling. It makes you feel things in a very deep and visceral way. So shout out to Andor. Tony Gilroy, man, just give him all the awards. Give him all the awards. It's so good.
He's done a really great job. One last one, and we kind of touched on this slightly last week, but what about Jamie from Ted Lasso?
Ooh, yeah. Jamie Tart.
I have one more. I just have to remember his name, so go ahead.
Well, it's riffing on the next part of this, part two of this.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's his name. This is one that Cody probably doesn't know very well, but I think John Paul, you've... Kaladin Stormblessed.
Such a good redemption arc.
So, it's a whole bunch of them. The Stormlight Archives is.
I don't know how his arc is going to end. But yeah, he's a good character.
Can I tell you what I love about a redemption arc story? I don't know what it is about, you know, humanity. Underdogs and redemption arc stories have a particular pull for me. Like when I'm watching a sports story, it's like I love the underdog and redemption arcs because I think it shows that regardless of like where you're at, there's always a chance to make those adjustments in your life to get to where you want to be.
What I love about Kaladin is his redemption arc is a little different than most. He isn't the underdog that suddenly comes out on top and is just amazing. He kind of starts to rise, but he has flaws, and he realizes that he can't be that top like hero, but everybody still loves him because he actually is, but he's flawed. He's very flawed, and it's so good. You would really like it.
I think you touched on something really profound there, Cody, and I'm going to say that I think it's a great metaphor for life and for golf. We actually joked about this today because we had kind of a rough round. You're only ever one really great golf shot around away from redeeming any round.
Yeah.
I mean, that chip in that you had a couple weeks ago, It didn't matter what the rest of the, it didn't matter. And when you go home after a round of golf, you don't remember the bad shots. That's why we keep coming back to this stupid game, because we remember the good ones, and it's just, you know, that's why we keep playing.
Well, and I think it was Rick Shields who said that great shots follow bad shots.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, yeah. So I was just going to add along this with redemption arcs in our media and our movies and everything. I want to try and take that attitude into a golf round. If things are starting really bad for me, can I turn it around?
Oh, that could be a...
We need a quote. We need a quote for turning around a round.
Oh, I was just thinking we could make that even like a boss or like a...
Oh, man.
Like gotta, a reward.
Come on.
You're
Zuko alone.
No, what's Iroh's best line? What's his best line that he gives to Zuko?
Leaves from the vine.
Oh.
Leaves from the vine.
That is so good. You stand over the shot and you just say,
Leaves from the vine,
and just go.
I am a leaf on the wind.
That is fantastic. I love that. That makes me cry every time too, man. Every time. I've seen it so many times.
Have you ever heard the actor that did that talk about that?
He won't sing it again.
Yeah. Have you ever heard about it?
No.
He sang that as a eulogy for the actor that had played Iroh before. They were really good friends. So he sang that for him.
Oh, man.
And so people are always like, you need to sing it. Like, come to Comic-Con and sing it. And he's like, no, that was a song to mourn the passing of my best friend. I will not sing that. On that note, let's do a birdie bev.
Birdie bev. Birdie bev.
Time for another birdie bev. Oh, you have a birdie bev cooler?
Yeah, I figured it was a good way to hide them.
That is fantastic.
Today's birdie bev is brought to you by a bunch of bogeys.
And doubles and triples.
When is the last time we made a birdie? It's been a bit. I burned the edge on
I had a look today.
I did that chip in not too long ago.
Yeah, you chipped in. Last week. I think that's the last one we had.
Last week? Yes.
That's 2 weeks ago.
Was it 2 weeks ago?
That was 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man.
Last week was a birdie desert.
So for today's birdie bev, Eric is pouring the glass and I am not looking because we are trying to keep this a bit secretive. We have our pen and paper in front of us to write down our scores. And I got to tell you right off the cuff, this is a bit of a lighter root beer than I thought.
Yeah.
It's a bit paler than I think a traditional brown root beer.
I do want to say the bottle cap has a quote in it that might be interesting to read.
Oh, okay. Well, let's get our scores in. Let's take our drinks in and I'm going for it.
Okay, me too.
What is that?
What happened? There's no way. There is no way.
Record it. Just record your score.
I ask if this is diet or...
It's not.
It's not.
It's going to be low.
Do you want to know the odds of this getting a high score? It's low. It's
that is so bad. Low. I'm so sad.
I can't even properly do this.
Does the quote on the bottle cap per any chance say, ye who enter herein, abandon all hope?
Like,
don't expect much.
Like normally when we have one of these root beers.
Manage your expectations.
Yeah, that's what they should put. All right, let's just reveal our scores.
I didn't write a score yet.
Just do it.
Because I need another drink.
Nobody needs another drink of that.
Oh, it's so bad.
I prefer a soda that's been left out and the ice has melted into it. And so now it's mostly like watery.
Yeah.
That is more preferable to this.
I feel like something happened to this one. Okay. Ready? Reveal.
Twos all the way around.
All right. You ready for the beer?
Yeah.
Or the bev?
Judge for yourself, Rupert. That is really bad omen.
It is so bad.
We have judged for ourselves and we have found it wanting.
And this is a quote on the bottle. Stop striving for mediocrity when you can indulge in what is real.
Stop striving for mediocrity. Nail it with this root beer.
It is so... Okay. So to describe for the listeners, it is just like, yeah, like Cody said, it is watered down to the point that there's almost no root beer.
I want you to imagine that you fill a cup all the way to the top with ice.
And then pour it a little
root
beer.
And then you pour about a half a can of root beer in it, and then you let it sit there for 2 days. That's what this feels like.
Okay, hold on here. On the label, it says, "Judgment Day cometh to those who have lost their fizz." This has no fizz.
It has
no fizz.
This
is so bad. What I wonder.
Wow. I mean, there is
this is one that
we got it at the root beer store. Okay. It's probably expired.
I think it expired.
No, but here's the deal. On the label, there is a gavel about to smash a root beer. I am in agreement with that gavel.
And Eric's going back for more.
How? How is he doing it?
I just wonder if towards the bottom, it's better if we should have mixed it or something.
I'm trying to decide if I'm going to finish what's in front of me.
It's so
bad. How many carbs is in this thing?
I mean, it says 40 for the bottle, but I can't believe that. It doesn't taste like it has that much sugar.
How can water have 40 carbs?
This is not just the worst root beer I've ever had. This is the worst soda I've ever had. This is... Okay, well...
It's bad.
It's just one step up from that tonic water garbage.
Yeah, that was bad.
Okay, there's some Braille on here.
There's Braille?
Oh my god!
Does it say beware?
It is terrible. Does it beware in Braille? Qualities.
I'm gonna give it a stir.
I might take that back down to a one because I don't think you can get a worse root beer than that.
You didn't spit it out.
We didn't spit it out.
Yeah,
you
but
gotta,
I don't.
You
think...
gotta leave some room at the bottom. That's bad though. That is an awful. Ugh, that's awful.
Oh, it's so bad.
Nope, it's terrible. It's terrible. I judged for myself, and you have not been redeemed.
So that's not going
redemption
in.
Arc. Nothing.
As a diabetic,
there's no redeeming that.
As a diabetic, I have to be careful about what sugar calories I consume. I have to be discerning about what I eat and don't eat. I regret every drop of that entered my body.
It's bad. It's bad. It's definitely not going up with the Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.
No. Like, if we had a wall of shame, this would be the king.
Maybe we do need one. Okay. Who is, like, the lowest of the low scum that everybody just agrees is just awful?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
What's her name? From Harry Potter.
Umbridge?
Umbridge. She's pretty bad. It's bad. There's nothing more to be said. It's awful.
It's awful. Just avoid it. Run away.
So on that note, thanks for listening to the For the Record. Listen to us talk about a crappy root beer. Kind of a letdown after that, but
we had these wonderful, profound thoughts and these great ideas
content.
And all of this, and then it just was let down at the very end by this awful tasting beverage.
Yeah. That being said, we're glad you made it this far in the episode. Make sure to give us a like on the episode. That really helps kind of boost that visibility, and please reach out to us, comment to us, ForTheRecord.com, ForTheRecord.com. You can get an update on our birdie bevs and a little bit of our handicaps and boss battle updates. Also follow us on Blue Sky and Instagram, ForTheRecord_golf.